It's Friday, May 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the U.S. unemployment rate holds steady at 5%. North Korea begins the 7th Workers' Party Conference.
I think it's going to be an event that's going to be really focused on Kim Jong-un.
And the Rolling Stones tell Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump not to use their music at his campaign events. It's all ahead. We begin with financial news. The U.S. economy had a net gain of 160,000 jobs in April, while the unemployment rate held steady at 5%. Friday's report from the Labor Department was weaker than most economists had predicted. I'm joined now by Jill Malandrino at the VOA Bureau in New York. Well, Jill, what was the reason for the weaker than expected report?
Well, they came in late, about 40,000 jobs. Analysts were expecting 200,000 jobs, and we came in at 160. And that's why we've seen a lot of volatility in the market. The key thing here is everyone is trying to jockey around what the Federal Reserve is going to do next. The market is incredibly sensitive to interest rate decisions, and the next meeting in June is when some analysts think we might see a rate hike. Some are pushing it out till after the election, and that's why we're seeing this volatility here. In fact, the market this week has had its worst week since we saw the turmoil in January and February. So there's the bulls and bears are locked in a fight right now, and until we get more clarity on what the economy is doing, is GDP going to grow? When is the Fed going to hike rates? I think we're going to be in a volatile environment at least through the elections.
What sectors are doing well, however?
We're doing well in services, manufacturing, construction. That continues to be on a decline. But because as the economy is transitioning into more of a services economy, we're seeing a pickup there. One of the reasons the report was not viewed as well, we're not seeing hourly growth in wages. That's what we need to see. We're not seeing creation of higher quality type of jobs. And again, that's what's lending to the volatility in the market and why the report wasn't received as well.
Yeah, and it's interesting because President Obama just made a statement at the White House talking about we have to do more to improve the economy. The candidates that are running, they keep saying this. How do you do that?
Well, it's interesting. I actually wrote an article about this earlier in the week once it was essentially locked in for Trump. And my piece was what stocks will do well, what stocks won't, what it's going to mean for international trade. And when I closed up my article, I said, look, the president will set a tone, but we still have to get things done in Congress, in the courts, with the states. And, you know, Clinton's talking a big game. Trump is talking a big game. Sanders is talking about a big game, getting things done, but you have to get it done across the board. And, you know, we'll see the next person who gets in if they can do that and not struggle day to day like President Obama has. That's what the key is going to be.
Thanks very much, Jill. That's Jill Malandrino in New York. Well, now joining me here in the studio is Hannah Klarner with all the social media news. So, Hannah, what's trending?
We actually have something that very recently started trending, and that's Arsenio Hall. So, Sinead O'Connor posted on Facebook pretty out of the blue, from what I can tell, that she thinks that everybody should be investigating Arsenio Hall for providing Prince with the drugs that potentially killed him. So he's actually responded by already filing a $5 million libel suit against her, and his social media has just gone dead silent. But Sinead O'Connor is following up on it. She wrote an article and posted that to her verified Facebook page as well. So the internet is responding to everything that's happening there. Nobody's really been able to point a finger other than yesterday we started to get a little information that they do believe that drugs played a part in Prince's death. So that's recently trending and a big thing, but also fun science stuff that's trending. Scientists actually discovered a brand new jellyfish in the Mariana Trench, So one of the deepest parts of the ocean, and they haven't named it yet, but it glows in the dark. So they're sending another dive team down there, and they're actually going to live stream one of their dives so people can actually see in relatively real time what they're discovering down in one of the deepest, darkest parts of the ocean. So a little science for your Friday. And lastly, two huge topics on social media are always Adele and Beyonce. So Adele actually came out in support of Beyonce in a recent concert, and she is just talking about how is it even possible that Beyonce always gets better when she drops these events. They're not albums anymore, like Lemonade. And Beyonce has also been receiving a little pushback from social media for not taking a stance in North Carolina with their transgendered bathroom law.
All right. Thanks very much, Hannah. That is Hannah Klarner. This is VOA. Some of the top stories trending. More than 70 people die in Syria after jihadists retake a village near Aleppo. Baghdad is on lockdown as anti-government protesters gather. SpaceX lands a rocket on an ocean platform, and Kenya moves to close refugee camps holding 400,000 people. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
Scientists say they have found fresh evidence that volcanoes once erupted billions of years ago beneath an ice sheet on Mars that is far from any ice sheet on the Red Planet today. Using NASA's Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, the researchers say their findings indicate that ice was widespread on the planet during its early history. They say their findings also offer proof that Mars once had an environment that combined heat and moisture, two elements that could have provided conditions for microbial life. The researchers tapped into data from the orbiter's Compact Reconnaissance Imaging Spectrometer for Mars, or CRISM, that examined the chemical makeup of the Martian surface in a region called Sisyphe Montes. The data revealed minerals like those that have been produced by Earth's subglacial volcanoes, such as zeolites, sulfates, and clays. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, the Philippines prepares for national elections. North Korea is holding one of its biggest political meetings in decades in Pyongyang. The 7th Workers' Party Congress began Friday by barring foreign journalists. The United States and its Asian allies are closely monitoring the situation on the Korean Peninsula during the high-level meeting of party representatives, which is expected to result in a reshuffling of some top officials. Washington also is anticipating the isolated government may take this occasion to launch a missile or conduct a nuclear test. The 7th Congress of the North's ruling Workers' Party is the first in nearly 40 years. The Congress will give leader Kim Jong-un an opportunity to assume center stage before a large domestic audience, including more than 3,000 delegates from around the nation. VOA's Steve Miller discusses the meeting with Adam Cathcart, editor-in-chief of the SinoNK.com website, and talks about some of the missile tests leading up to the event.
A lot of times you're not overly surprised when you see this now from North Korea. It kind of goes into their usual cycle of provocation and then look at negotiation. And you can kind of flip that on the other side. It works both ways for them. So I can't say that there was a lot of surprise. And as you know, with the Worker Party Congress coming up, there's a lot of pressure on Kim Jong-un to have what he would term as accomplishments in the security field, things that he can point to solidify his base and show that he's made achievements. So, I mean, there's been so much in the last few months with starting off with the nuclear test, the fourth nuclear test, the multiple long-range missile tests, the last two, which have been kind of failures. The work on miniaturization, the submarine missile launches as well. So there's been all of that has been kind of building up to this this meeting.
There's a lot of speculation as to what the purpose of this meeting is. The first time in 36 years. Do you have any expectations of what we may see, or any predictions about what may take place at that Congress meeting?
And I think it's going to be an event that's going to be really focused on Kim Jong-un and really focused on kind of trying to coalesce all of the things that have basically since he's taken over, and really trying to kind of assert that to his role at the top. I mean, I think that's really been what kind of what's been happening. We've been seeing over the past few years a lot of purges of key individuals, whether they be in the military and the political circles around Kim Jong-un. So I think that this is going to be really kind of a statement, so to say. I don't really know that we're going to see anything, any massive announcement. We potentially might, but I think it's going to be some of the theatrics around this event. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of pomp involved in it, and we may very well see a fifth nuclear test right before or surrounding that event.
How would you paraphrase or how would you word the current state of affairs between Pyongyang and Beijing, between North Korea and China?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, if I was to say one word, obviously complicated in the sense that, and, you know, as I said, China's in a tough spot. They're in a very tough spot. They are tied to North Korea in so many ways, with it kind of being a buffer between it and the United States, troops there and the presence there, and the potential for instability there. But they also see the security element of it. So it's becoming a bit of a severe nuisance for China. But it's a complicated relationship for sure.
That's Adam Cathcart. He's editor-in-chief of the SinoNK.com website. He was speaking with VOA Steve Miller. This weekend marks the closing days of the Philippines election campaign. On Monday, voters will choose the country's next leaders. Davao City Mayor Rodrigo Duterte is surging in polls against his closest opponent, Senator Grace Poe. In addition, Ferdinand Marcos Jr., the son of the late dictator, is running for the vice presidency. Raisa Robles is a journalist, blogger, and author of the book Marcos Martial Law, Never Again. I spoke with her about the campaign and asked whether Duterte's lead is a surprise.
Yes, it's surprising. He was not a candidate who was seriously looked at in December, but suddenly he became a very noticeable candidate, and people were flocking towards him. And even those, the middle class, the educated, the wealthy, wanted him. You know, Filipinos are looking at the possible return of a strongman rule if Mayor Rodrigo Duterte wins this Monday. The surveys right now, and we really don't know how accurate the surveys are because there are so many of them, says that 1 in 3 or 33% of voters will be voting for him. And that puts him around 11 percentage points ahead of the second strongest candidate, Senator Grace Poe. Now, we do not know if the recent revelations about allegations of ill-gotten wealth will have an impact on voters, because sometimes, you know, the impact comes several days after. Mm-hmm. The last survey that put him ahead was done on May 3.
Well, now, what about those revelations about Duterte's wealth? Could you tell us a bit about those?
Yes, it turns out that he has so many bank accounts and that money had been going in and out of his bank accounts to the tune of about over 2 billion pesos. Not only that, he also has so many properties, and most of these are under the name of his children.
Well, meanwhile, his leading opponent, I guess you could say, Senator Grace Poe, she, I believe, has vowed just within the last day or so, she said she's staying in the race. What is she campaigning on?
It's rather strange. Initially, she was campaigning on the same platform as Tuwid na Daan, you know, the straight and narrow path, and that's the slogan of the administration candidate. The reason why she is popular is that she is the daughter, the adopted daughter of the late movie star Fernando Poe Jr. I'm not sure exactly what her campaign platform is. It's a hodgepodge. She is promising a lot of things to many people, climate change. She is well instructed by her advisors, but during the last debate, it shows that she did not have the grasp of how a presidency works. But she's quite popular.
The late dictator Ferdinand Marcos, his son Ferdinand Marcos Jr., I think he's known as Bong Bong, he is running for vice president. And I believe he's sort of tied with his closest competitor, is that right?
Yes, Congresswoman Lenin Robredo, who has come from behind. She's a dark horse, actually. She's a widow of the late Interior and Local Government Secretary Jess Robredo. And the reason why she has spurted is that people found her very articulate. She has no political baggage. She has no problem with ill-gotten wealth. In fact, she takes the bus to go home to the province. Very unusual for a politician to take the public transport, actually. And then, strangely enough, she's now in a statistical tie with Bongbong Marcos. And people actually have flocked to her because those who do not want the Marcoses to win feel that she should become the vice president.
That's Philippine journalist Raisa Robles speaking from Manila. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. Presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump has been no stranger to controversy. In fact, he seems to embrace it. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald joins International Edition's Jim Stevenson to discuss an opponent Mr. Trump may find more difficult than Hillary Clinton.
Donald Trump is going up against something even bigger than the Democratic Party, the Rolling Stones. They want Trump to stop using their music at his rallies. Now, he's used their songs for months, among them You Can't Always Get What You Want and Start Me Up. Well, on Wednesday, the Stones issued a statement saying they did not give Donald Trump permission to use their music, and they would like him to cease and desist. Now, at this time, the Trump campaign has yet to respond. This isn't the first time that the Donald has bumped heads with some musical stars. He's also used music from Elton John, Adele, and Aerosmith. Now, Adele and Steve Tyler of Aerosmith both asked Trump to stop using their songs. So did Neil Young. Trump was using Rockin' in the Free World last year. The Trump campaign did comply in those cases. They stopped using the songs. Political campaigns don't need artists' permission to use their songs as long as the organization or the venue has obtained a blanket license from the BMI or ASCAP performing rights organizations. Now, BMI says it does have a provision in its licensing agreement that allows songwriters or publishers to object to the use of their songs, and they do have the right to exclude those particular songs from the blanket licensing. So I suppose the Stones could go that way if they license their songs through BMI. You know, this isn't the first time that politicians have run afoul of music artists. There's kind of a long history of sometimes tone-deaf usage of these songs. And the one that really sticks out in my mind is the Ronald Reagan campaign's usage of Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA in the 1984 presidential election. And, of course, Reagan was using it in a patriotic sense, when, in fact, if you listen to the song, it's very sharply critical of the U.S. and its policies. So I think sometimes the campaign workers really need to listen to the music a little more carefully before they put it on the PA system. So we'll just have to wait and see how the Trump campaign reacts to this latest request from the Stones.
Yeah, campaigns over the years have made some very interesting musical choices. And I'm glad you answered that question about the licensing, because I always wondered what that was all about with the public performance angle of it. And because not just anybody can go out and play songs like that in a public performance setting. There are laws and licensing requirements.
Well, more often than not, the politicians back down and stop using the songs, at least temporarily. But they have a pretty plentiful supply of other songs to choose from.
We talked about this outside of the studio. Perhaps Get Off My Cloud is the appropriate Stones song for
and you can't always
Trump
get
campaign.
What you want, Donald.
Absolutely. Well, we get what we want every time we speak with Ray McDonald. He's our Top 20 Countdown host. Follow Ray on Twitter.
At Ray on the Hits.
Thank you, Ray.
You got it.
And my thanks as well to International Edition's Jim Stevenson and to Ray McDonald. Well, Japan, a longtime supporter of economic development in Southeast Asia, is stepping up its engagement in the region as China has raised its profile in the 10-member Association of Southeast Asian Nations. Tokyo is also enhancing its role in Southeast Asia security debates, especially the South China Sea, where territorial disputes continue. That's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
At an April 18th U.S. congressional hearing, Tibetan monk and former political prisoner Golok Jigme described the torture he reports he experienced over the course of several detentions in China from 2008 to 2012. Unfortunately, such treatment of Tibetan political prisoners continues, according to the State Department's 2015 report on human rights in China. According to the report, the Chinese government's respect for human rights in Tibetan regions remained poor in 2015. Under the professed objectives of controlling border areas, maintaining social stability, and combating separatism, the government engaged in the severe repression of Tibet's unique religious, cultural, and linguistic heritage by, among other means, strictly curtailing the civil rights of China's Tibetan population. Other serious abuses included extrajudicial detentions, disappearances, and torture. The State Department reports Chinese officials severely beat, even to the point of death, some Tibetans who were incarcerated or otherwise in custody. The report cites the case of Tenzing Chudak, an environmental NGO worker who died 2 days after his release and reportedly suffered brain damage due to torture. There were also reports of recently released prisoners who were permanently disabled because of the harsh treatment they endured in prison. U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for the Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor, Tom Malinowski, said in an interview that it is not in China's interest to have permanent instability in Tibet.
To the extent that there are people within the Chinese government who worry about separatism, about Tibet going its own way, the best way to avoid the growth of those sorts of sentiments in Tibet is to work with, to engage in dialogue with clearly legitimate leaders like the Dalai Lama, who have consistently over the years said that they believe that Tibet should remain in China and that all they are seeking is respect for basic human rights, respect for cultural traditions.
At the release of the annual human rights reports, Secretary of State John Kerry emphasized that a government's respect for human rights is not only a moral obligation. It's an opportunity to harness the full energy of a country's population in building a cohesive and prosperous society, said Secretary Kerry. And it doesn't jeopardize stability. It enhances it.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.